This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The Purple Thistle operated as a youth-run community center for arts and activism for almost 15 years. It was located in the Murgatroyd building in Vancouver's east side. The Purple Thistle closed its doors exactly a year ago today. In a letter announcing the closure, the collective said the Thistle was never meant to be an institution, but rather a space where folks could dream about doing something collaboratively and then do it. A new documentary celebrates what the Thistle achieved and what it meant to some of the people involved in it. Common Notions was produced and directed by Carla Bergman and Corin Brown, and it's going to premiere May 11th at the Doxa Documentary Film Festival. Carla Bergman was director of the Purple Thistle for 6 years, and she continues to support youth initiatives through the Thistle Institute. Corin Brown is a video maker, organizer, and community-engaged artist. She's also resident filmmaker at Templeton Secondary School. Carla Bergman and Corin Brown join me this morning in the studio. Hello, Carla and Corin.
Hi.
How are you
Thanks
doing?
For having us.
It's great to have you here. Now, the Thistle was founded by Matt Hearn and seven teenage girls in 2001. What was the motivation for starting up?
It was actually a mixed gender of youth. There was a group of them who were students at Windsor House Democratic School, the publicly funded school in North Vancouver where Matt had worked. And he had noticed that they weren't particularly thriving and they were neighborhood kids over here in East Vancouver. So they got together once a week for about 6 months and talked about what they wanted to do in East Van together. That would be cool. And what came out of that was an art space, a space where they could run, they could hire mentors, and they could run it together. And I think they got their first grant from YPC, and on they went.
Now, I mentioned that the Purple Thistle was in the Murgatroyd building in East Vancouver, and probably not everybody knows where that is. But tell me about the space. What kind of space did you have there?
So a lot of people are familiar with 1000 Parker Street from the Cultural Crawl. It's in this kind of intersection of an industrial area. So it's surrounded by kind of light semi-industrial businesses and artist studios. So the Murgatroyd is an artist studio building. There's how many?
Gosh, at least 15
dozens. Yeah, of artist studios in the building, and so it's always been this kind of comfortable, interesting fit to have a youth-run space in the midst of a bunch of working artists.
And what did the community center look like in terms of what you had inside that building?
Right, we had 2,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And it was multi-purpose, and it changed depending on who was in there. But we, you know, it had a place to do sound recording. We did a little bit of podcasting over the years. We had a screen printing room, a dark room. At one time, it was all sewing machines, like half the room. It really shifted depending on who was there, what the youth wanted, because it never stayed fixated on a pedagogy or an idea of what was going to be taught in there. It always came up from the youth who were running it, of what they wanted to see happen in the space.
Now, you describe it as a youth-run community center for arts and activism, and usually a community center, the way I know them, are they're organized around programs or classes with teachers who teach certain skills on a schedule. Was the Thistle at all like that?
It's interesting because I didn't really call it a community center per se. I would think of it more as a social space, you know, drawing on some of the threads of the radical spaces, the social spaces. It really very much was run by the people who used it, the participants who were there. And at times it was heavily programmed, and other times it was nothing was happening. It really depended on the relationships of the kids who were there and what they wanted to do. Were they more self-reliant? Did they run their own classes? Or did we bring in amazing mentors like Corin? And that's how I met Corin, is she came in and was a film mentor for quite a few years. In fact, I think we started at the Thistle around the same time, in 2007 or 2008.
One of the things, one of the quotes from the film that really has always stuck with me was from Matt, and of course I'm not going to quote him verbatim, but he talked about how the Thistle occupied this really interesting space that not a school, so kids didn't have those kind of relationships with their teachers, although definitely a place of learning, but also not a community center, because typically community centers are about keeping kids safe and keeping them off the street and away from the community. And the Thistle was the exact opposite. It was about how to put kids into the community, get them on the streets, make them visible.
What were some of the programs that that happened there?
We had a daytime program, which both Corinne and I worked at, which was a Skills Links program, you know, Skills Links Canada. And it was for young women, self-identified women, to come and do art and activism and gain life skills. And that's where I think one of the first places mm-hmm. you worked as a film mm-hmm. Maker with those girls. That was kind of the bread and butter. It funded the project so that we could do all these great things at night. We often had zines and publishing. A lot of publishing came out of the Thistle. Over the years, self-published from the kids, or we had like a larger project. Rain ran out of there for years. Filmmaking, of course, animation, screen printing. I think almost if you talk to anyone in East Van, some they've probably done screen printing at the Thistle.
Dark room,
photography, yeah. Alternative filmmaking. So a lot of SFU film students came to the Thistle because we had this ancient way of making films through chemicals in a bucket. But incredible work came out of there. I think, yeah, the thing I was always really impressed with was the level of work that came out of the Thistle was just awe-inspiring.
What do you attribute that to?
To be honest, that's what we just spent the past 5 years trying to figure out, yeah. Making this documentary. What made it work? What? Why did kids who stepped into the Thistle doors thrive, the ones that did? And I think that's part of what we talk about in the film is the common notions. And really, they're not big, crazy ideas that people can't do. It's things like friendship. So the core of the work that happened out of the Thistle was based on deep, nurtured, intentional friendships between the kids, amongst the collective members, between the mentoring adults, the families that would come in. And then there's other ones. Yeah. Doing it together, which yeah. was Carla's awesome idea.
Yeah, and I think it was also based on some politics and some principles. And I think we draw those out. Corinne really helped doing the work she does with kids and producing films and storytelling, helped me and us together tease out the difference between what we mean by a common notion versus like the politics of the space, which I think we draw on as well, which, you know, are the, you know, there's a lot of mutual aid, collectively run. Horizontality was really valued. We did an informal consensus based, no one was in charge of anybody else. Those types of politics were really brought in.
And how did the people who use the center participate in running it?
Yeah, they literally participate in running it. They had keys. So the kids that formed the collective, and kids, that's a completely friendly term, the age range there from what? Sometimes there was young
usually
teens,
it was
right?
15 to 30-ish, the bulk being that 17 to about 22. And it would vary between, depending on how, you know, different times we would have a lean collective sometimes around 8, but it'd go up to 30, 35. And they'd all have keys to the space. They made all the decisions on the budget, on what ran there. And there was a bunch of different organizations, our collectives that sort of branched off. Like we had a gardening project, we had the publishing project, and that ran more as a collective of collectives. And everyone had their own autonomy, but checked in with that core collective. That core collective had final say in terms of, you know, how the space was going to be used. Almost every activist group or movement building group used the Thistle to make banners for something, right? Like it was just used. I think it's a resource that maybe is lacking right now in the city, and that feels hard, I'm sure. But yeah, there's so many people use the space. Hundreds and hundreds walk through there. Yeah.
probably as people who are involved in the community, we probably don't even know how many sort of tentacles went out in the community from a place like that when there is a kind of creative heart where people who are young and who are engaged and who are experimenting with things are producing things mm-hmm. that you end up seeing in the mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. In the film, Astra Taylor says there's a difference between an alternative school and an alternative to school, which is how you describe the Purple Thistle. How is that different?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We all kind of have this similar idea of getting away from that binary, that argument of like school is bad or school is good or school is this, school is that. It's like, why don't we just rethink entirely how we work with young people in our community and get out of that argument, because it actually gets us stuck. Kids have to go to school in most cases, right? Like parents need their kids to be somewhere. It gets us stuck in a us and them. And so the Thistle really worked hard to deprivilege that whole notion. And we were open at after school hours on purpose. It was very intentional right away, makes it an alternative to school. And then the other piece is pedagogically. Like alternative schools often carry forward a lot of the school type things that are kind of sucky and then get rid of the other parts. And we just didn't want any of that. Yeah. So it's layered.
And Matt talks a lot about in the film that institutions like schools or even alternative schools have a kind of philosophy or pedagogy to begin with. And then they wish for kids to fit into that, where the Thistle was very intentionally the exact opposite. So there is no way that it's running except that it's running by a group of kids forming a collective. So they get to define what goes on and how it works.
Sounds like anarchy, which I guess to some of us that's a good concept. And you know, maybe to a lot of people, especially when you think of schools or community centers or youth, that's maybe something that could be frightening. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
did you encounter any of that kind of reaction?
Sure.
I guess from the parents of children or people in institutions that that might feel threatened by something like a school which is running from that basis.
Yeah, for sure. I used to joke that was part of my role. I pass. And I would often meet parents who were, especially the younger kids who had keys, and I would just meet with them. And I pass as kind of normal and one of them. And I'm turning 50 this year. And, you know, and I have my own kids were there and they saw, and I would invite them in. It was like inviting the parents in or inviting some of the kids in who were worried too. It's not just parents. There was kids who didn't think they were, radical enough or didn't have the right politics. And I think we really try to flesh this out in the film, that we actively pushed away a kind of strong ideological framework that was happening in a lot of radical spaces. You know, no shaming if you were Nike runners, for example. Meeting kids where they're at. And so we worked hard, but it was there for sure. It often gets called an anarchist space. It definitely is in all the material. The anarchist material is the one of the best social spaces. So it tried to do both.
Towards the end of the film, you talk about the importance of the key concepts, the four key concepts, mm-hmm. some of which you touched on already: trust, friendship, hospitality, and doing it together. Talk to me about what you mean by hospitality in the context of a place like the Thistle.
Sure. Again, I'm going to just point a little bit to Matt Hearn. He's written a lot about this, and then I'm going to like jump ahead of him and go to Ivan Illich. It's a concept that he really worked with and tried to flesh out. And it's one of those words that has a deep, deep meaning when we're practicing it. It has a connotation of just, having people over and feeding them well with nice food and taking care of them. But it's the next step beyond tolerance. Tolerance is like you're just going to put up with people, right? And hospitality is like, I'm going to actually open my heart across difference and see you for you. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that I think we're all trying to figure out. And it's an important common notion, I think, that I would like to see more people talk about.
And really, what happened at the Thistle? You could just feel it. Like you could feel it when you walked in the doors. Most kids, I think that's what kept kids there. It was like, ah, I can wear the Nike runners. I don't have to be the patch-wearing punk rock kid. I can actually be a suburban kid that goes to school because I have to. Or I can be all these other things.
Yeah. Yeah. I can be the punk kid with the patches.
Exactly.
Seems to me like such a radical notion, as because I can, it's been a while, but I can remember when I was a youth and kind of that incredible kind of confusion of trying to, like, what am I even supposed to do as a youth in terms of, like, fitting in, or, you know, what are the expectations of me and where do I fit in and how do I have to be? Mm-hmm. Seems like such a I wish I'd had that opportunity in my youth.
Yeah,
but you must have experienced that with some of the kids just kind of coming there because the pressures on youth are so huge.
Yeah, and how to be, and here's a place that actually isn't going to tell you what to do and how to be, so oh my God, what do I do then? Yeah.
Why did you decide to close the Thistle last year?
Right. So good question.
That question was coming.
I did, and I didn't realize it was the date to the year. I felt very sad when I heard that, but it's been good overall. There's four core reasons. The first one is we lost the core funding for that project I mentioned earlier in the interview, the Skills Links, the sort of bread and butter federally funded program. We lost that about a year and a half before we closed, and, you know, scrambled to patch together money and keep it going, but we lost two more core funders. It's part of the way that funding works is not really into the long term. The city was a good long term supporter, but other than that, it was, they like to be project based or short term. So that was sort of the one of the reasons, but I don't think it's the reason. I started to notice, more importantly, is that a lot of young people were starting their own projects, and there isn't that much pool of money, and they were needing money, and we were going for same grants, and they were phoning me to ask them to help them get their projects off the ground, which were kind of similar to some of the things that were happening at the Thistle. And I just did a really personal check-in with myself of, why do I do this work? Well, to support young people to have thriving lives. Well, aren't you standing in their way right now with this long-term project that has a lot of social capital, that if there is a pool of money, it's going to get it? That was one of the really big reasons to get out of the way. Like, part of youth liberation is adults to get out of the way. Use your resources and your power to help, but ultimately get out of the way. So that one, the money, those are the two big ones. And then connected to that is because there's so much stuff happening in the city, so much more youth-run spaces, youth-led spaces, collectively-run spaces. There's just so much to do, and enrollment was down. Like, and enrollment's not the right word, but drop-ins were down. People weren't coming as much. We had a strong collective, but the classes were empty. Drop-in was empty. And you gotta, like, you know, I think there's a line in the film for Matt that if it's, and this, we interviewed him for this, and that line was in my head when we talked to the collective. Was if it's not a social project, then there's no point in doing it, right? Like, if it's not a response to the community you're in, like, if people in your neighborhood aren't coming, then don't do it. And that's what we responded to. And the collective was wonderful. Mm. And we did a really lovely 3-month closing, slow, big show, wrote the letter to the community, which has really helped the discourse, I think, about sometimes it's okay to lay it down and move on.
Yeah, so that someone else can pick it up.
You started making the film 5 years ago when there was no thought of closing the Thistle.
Yeah.
And you continued the film in the year after it closed. How did that influence the film that you finally came up with?
It made it easier. I mean, number one, because it gave us a narrative arc that, to be totally frank, as filmmakers, we were struggling with. And also, one of the things of making as two adults, even an adult like Carla, who is so deeply embedded in the Thistle, and I count a lot of the youth that we interviewed as friends and folks that I've worked with, but even that felt like a difficult conversation to be having, that why are we, you know, and it was a back and why, and we had lots of youth voices, and we did, there was kind of elements that we were trying to really make it a collaborative process. But that was hard, because the Thistle changes with every collective, so it wasn't. And so in that respect, when it closed, it felt like we don't have to speak for the kids anymore. because we get to tell this story about planting seeds for the next group that is going to start a new thistle, which I'm sure there's going to be one.
Yeah. I mean, the main reason why we made the film was when I was the director, I got at least 5 or 6 emails a week of people asking, how do I start a thistle? And it's just not one of those projects. There's no recipe. Here's the recipe, add water. It's just not there. And I also not really big on public speaking, and I was asked to come to visit communities, and the youth are usually, they're so busy. It's one of the ways I think youth oppression continues to work, is that the youth were running a really dynamic project. Like, we all know how hard it is to run something, and they were busy, and they didn't have the time to go and help other people start theirs. They were doing this incredible thing, and the idea to make the film came out of doing that kind of panel work with youth, and we all went, no, let's not do this anymore, let's make a film. And so I felt like it felt really nice that it came from them and from us together, and I've never made a film before, and hence collaboration is what I like to do, and Corn is a big part of the thistle at the time, so it made sense to collaborate on this. And she said yes, phew. And I just want to say our co-director editor John Collins is like a big part of why that I think I'm really proud of this film, and I hope everyone comes and sees it, because hopefully it does plant seeds and people take it.
And John is a really fantastic editor, and so that's why we've credited him as a co-director, because the story came when we started cutting.
Yeah. As is often the case with editors, they're like the unseen angels of films often.
Yeah.
It's been wonderful talking to you, and I really appreciate, the project itself, which I've just learned about through the film, and the work that you did. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I've been speaking with Carla Bergman and Corin Brown. They produced and directed the new documentary, Common Notions, Handbook Not Required. The film premieres May 11th as part of the Doxa Documentary Film Festival, and it's showing at 5 p.m. at the Van City Theater. It's showing with another film called Raising the Word. So that'd be an exciting one to see as well when you go and see that. And Doxa runs from May 5th to the 15th. For more information about Doxa, check out their full schedule at doxafestival.ca.